Hey there, I'm Brian Kateman, host of the Reducitarian Podcast, where I speak to experts in their field about how to accomplish a concrete goal that advances our shared mission for a more sustainable, healthy, and compassionate world. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Andrew, thanks so much for being on the Reducitarian Podcast.
Pleasure to be here, Brian.
Well, really happy to have you and very excited about today's topic on how to network, because we all know that networking is super important in terms of so many of the goals that we might have in life. And you are no better person than I can think of to discuss this issue. So before we dive in, though, maybe you can just give folks a little bit of background on who you are and why you're a good person to talk to about this topic.
My name's Andrew Griffiths, I wear a couple of different hats, but I'm director of community and partnerships at an organization called Planet Mark, where we support organizations on their sustainability journeys, right? And so community and partnerships, my whole world is relationships. It's all about people. It's all about connecting with people and bringing people together as well and making those connections. So I've spent the last sort of 5 or 6 years being a prolific networker. predominantly, it began through, university, lots of things that you don't think of as networking are actually networking, like making friends at university. That's, you're practicing networking. And then I joined an organization called the Institute of Directors as a member and sort of threw myself into that community of professionals and directors and leaders, and navigating that as a young guy in his early 20s, where you've got to be networking with, senior, execs and directors from massive companies and small companies and all shapes and sizes. How do you do so in a meaningful way that enables you to connect with people, leave a lasting impression, and ultimately form strong relationships, is what it's all about. So that's sort of my background on it. And hopefully I can share a few things that will help people who want to get better at it.
Well, I'm sure you can. And just for context, I happened to see Andrew's TEDx talk, which was really fantastic. And I encourage people to check it out. So yeah, it's funny. Networking feels like one of those things, I think, that people think that they can't learn. That it's just like, there are people who are born with charisma and then there are people who aren't, and there's really no, middle ground or ability to grow. Obviously, that's something that we both don't believe in, which is why we're going to be talking about this today. But there's a lot of anxiety around networking, right? Like, can be a lot of discomfort. I think we've all had the experience of walking into a room or a conference or some event and not knowing anyone and really not knowing how to connect and form relationships, as you said. So I don't know where to begin. I never do when I'm having these conversations. If it's helpful, we can start really broad, or we can imagine, someone just walked into a conference and they have no idea what the hell to do. How do you suggest we get started thinking about how to network?
You identify something there, Brian. In people, there's this negative stigma around the concept of networking, right? Just as an idea, when you ask most people, do you enjoy networking? Most people, wherever they are on how good they are at it, will say, no, I hate it. I hate networking. It's awful. And a lot of that's because it's seen whether you're networking online or you're networking offline, it's seen as somewhere where you are faking the best version of yourself, and so is everyone else. And so it's kind of this superficial environment where what you're trying to do is you're trying to get money out of people as quickly as humanly possible. And you feel like everyone wants something from you and you want something from everyone else. And it's all very transactional and it doesn't really mean anything. What I've sort of found is you meet people like that. You meet people who are transactional networkers, who it's all about the numbers, and they'll hand out their business card to as many physical hands in the room as they possibly can. But that doesn't work that well. It never did, but increasingly it doesn't work, because people are sort of tired of that and they don't want that. And people want genuine, meaningful connections with like-minded people. And so I think, and often, as you say, people say, it's not something you can learn. It absolutely is something you can learn. It is a skill. It is something that you get better at with practice. It is something that you get rusty at if you haven't done it for a while. It is something where, and everyone is, you'd have to be a psychopath not to be anxious about going into some rooms. And you'll find there'll be some rooms that you go into. But I now am usually fairly comfortable. I have to sort of gear myself up a bit for it. But I'm pretty comfortable going into a room with very senior directors because I find it's quite easy now. The important thing, you just got to see them as normal human beings. And as soon as you've done that, you're fine. If you see them as normal human beings, they love it. It's even easier with senior people and celebrities and stuff like that, because if you treat them like a normal human being, they love it because no one treats them like a normal human being anymore. Mm. And they'll think of you as on, you know, their equal because you're treating them as your equal. And so it's one of these quite curious things. But there are, like, I went to an event at COP26, the big sustainability summit in Glasgow, which was hosted by the British Fashion Council. Now, it was great. It was a really good event, but I felt like a fish out of water. Because I'm walking into a room with designers and people in just these elegant suits and dresses. And I'm wearing a suit, but like, I was like, all of these people know this isn't a designer suit. This is, they know that this is something that's been cobbled together from various charity shop purchases and acquisitions over several, this shirt is 5 years old. And so I felt like a fish out of water. So I still get those nerves. I still get that anxiety. That's normal. Totally normal. And you sort of use that. And the other thing is that people think, some people are born to be good at it because they're extroverts versus introverts, which is, you know, extroversion, introversion is about where you get your energy from. And so extroverts like myself, as you can probably tell, are often thought to be good at networking just because we can come across as confident, often because we will talk before we think, and we haven't thought something through necessarily before we say it. But the key thing is that I get energy from being around people. So I like being in a group of people where I feel like people are bouncing off each other, and I gain energy from that. Whereas some friends of mine, like, great example of this, my best friend, Alexandra Galvez, she is absolute queen of networking. She's an introvert, massive introvert. And she will talk about her experience of networking and saying she prefers to do more one-on-one small group conversation. She'll gravitate towards that rather than a larger group of people. She would never go and buffet in on a large group of people. She wants to have one-on-one conversations as much as possible.
I'm like your friend. Yeah. I'm just like your friend.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So that's for you. So the tips for introverts on networking that I've got from her, I can't take any credit for this because it's all her, is, you know, focus on finding individuals is number one. Number two, give yourself time to recharge your batteries. She'll, like, a networking event, she'll disappear for a while because she's recharging her batteries. She's going to have some alone time, go and eat some food, have a drink by herself, and then she'll come back into it. And recharging batteries is really important. And same within friendship groups, you know, being able to be open about it, saying, no, I need to recharge my batteries. And the way I do that is by being by myself. The other tactic is finding other introverts. And really straightforward way, if you're at a big conference, you walk into a room, the introverts are often the ones standing by themselves somewhere near the buffet by a table looking fairly awkward and like they don't really want to be there. And so you can walk up to that person, and it doesn't matter whether they're an introvert or an extrovert or whatever, you walk up to that person who's by themselves and you say, hey, I hate these things, don't you? I feel so uncomfortable. And they'll go, oh God, yes. Ah, me too. And now you're bonding. Now you've opened up the conversation, you've found something in common, and you're building a relationship. Because ultimately that's what you're trying to do with networking, right? What you're trying to do is find common ground as quickly as you possibly can. That's the game. You are basically, the faster you can find something about that person, it doesn't even have to be common ground, something about that person you find genuinely interesting, as soon as you've done that, game over. You've seen the fire light up in their eyes. They're talking about something animatedly and passionately because they care about the subject that you managed to get onto. And that might not be the job that they do. But if someone's talking to you and they're like, oh, well, I do auditing and, you know, I will usually then be following up with like, okay, what do you enjoy most about your job? Like, what's your favorite bit? And then what you're looking for is, okay, where am I going to find something that really lights them up a bit? And sometimes you have to get onto the point where you move away from talking about what they do for work, because you'll find out, oh no, what I love is doing up houses. yeah, in my spare time, that's what I, you know, I every house I get, I want to do it up and do loads of DIY. Or oh, my hobby is pottery. you'll find someone, and it'll be quirky, it'll be different, but my God, that's fascinating when someone is really passionate about something. So that's sort of the game you play. And
those examples relate really well to a couple of things you said, right? It's, you mentioned how it's about forming a relationship. So this is like, sometimes we have this intuition, we have to just get straight to it. But if you find yourself bonding over, you know, the dogs that you have and sharing photos of the dogs or anything that builds that emotional connection, that's going to facilitate maybe the old, even if it's intentional or unintentional or whatever, one, you could make a new friend, but two, yeah, it could lead to a business. It could lead to partnership, collaborations, and so on. I really liked what you said about just acknowledging your feelings. Like if you're feeling uncomfortable or nervous, that's so beautifully authentic and vulnerable that average person will like that, right?
Yeah, no, so because people like authenticity, and you can bond with someone else on that, because like I think one of the moments where that sort of set me off on doing stuff, I tend to, when I get into a place, if I'm not in the mood or I'm feeling nervous or anxious about it, I'll give myself a couple of minutes to be anxious, be nervous, and to sort of, you know, walk around the room, get a drink, grab a couple of nibbles, and then I reach what I sort of call my fuck it moment, where I go, fuck it, I'm just going to go and start. What's the worst that can happen if I just go and? And people are like, well, what do I say? How do I start a conversation? What do I do?
What do you say?
Just say hello. If you're at a networking event, like there are different circumstances. If you're at a networking event or a student social or whatever you're at, just say hello, because the reason that person came to this function tonight is to meet other people, exactly the same as you. You just going up and saying hello, they're going to love you for it, because you're now making it so that they don't have to do that awkward thing of being the first person to say hello. You've helped them. Especially if they're nervous. So just say hello. You don't have to get overly complicated about it. Just go, hey, I just want to come and say hello. Would love to meet you, get to know you a bit. My name's Andrew. Yeah, tell me a bit about you. And you just get, and then you start the, oh, how do I find something about this person that's really interesting? So just say hello. You can like lead in with different stuff. You know, you can be very British and talk about the weather or, you know, I feel like that COVID has replaced the weather as our favorite topic of conversation as Brits. You know, it's the first thing. Oh, yes. How were the lockdowns for you? Oh, yes.
You ever try like complimenting someone? I find this sometimes useful. Like I'll just walk up and be like, oh, I really like your socks. And there's what do you think about that?
I think it's brilliant. I use that a lot. You can compliment someone on their tie or on their shoes or something like that. There are some things you want to steer clear of, particularly if you're a professional networking event, going up and saying, you've got fantastic eyes, is creepy.
There's
a disclaimer there. There are certain compliments you wouldn't open with, but you can say, I love your outfit, or those are fantastic shoes, or you can make an observation.
I got one. How about you see their socks and they have your favorite animal on them? That's a twofer. Then you can compliment them and you can bond with them over something. See?
Exactly. I mean, that's it. So being observant is a really good thing. And that's true throughout the entire conversation. But for opening, being observant about things that are going on in the room, because you can open a conversation by commenting on something else that's happened. You can comment on the weather, the travel that you came there, COVID. Mm-hmm. You comment on the buffet. Oh, the buffet's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah, brilliant. Or the buffet's absolutely rubbish. Yeah. You can find something through it. But, and then when you're talking to them, be present. Be in that moment. Listen to what they are saying. Because don't just be waiting for your turn to speak.
Like you can see that the person have already started thinking of the next question. They're not actually taking in the information, or their eyes are darting and they're looking around the room and they're not, that's probably not going to create a good human connection, right?
No, exactly. And if they get the impression that you're just waiting, like if you've asked them to introduce themselves and they're introducing themselves, and you're clearly not paying attention because you're trying to think about how you're going to introduce yourself to them, just stop, just listen to what they're saying. and recognize, just ground yourself in that moment and go, am I listening? Am I actually listening? Would I be, you know, am I going to be able to follow up? And, you know, so finding ways to be able to sort of reference back to stuff that they've said and things like that is always really powerful. And, you know, because for most people, like if I, you know, when I do workshops and stuff on networking for people, it, you know, you ask people what's the hardest bit. And particularly young people, most people will say that starting a conversation is hardest, when actually it's the easiest bit, because once you, that's a ripping off the plaster moment. That's right. All that it's uncomfortable, but once you've done it, you're like, why did I make such a fuss over how difficult that was?
I think for some people, one of the fears, or at least the fear that comes up for me, is the assumption that the other person doesn't want to speak to you and you're almost inconveniencing the person or bothering them. And I personally, I find that this will come up much more if there's two people already talking to each other, right? So like, imagine if I see someone else off to the side, I can, you know, muster the confidence and what you're, all these tool tips that you're giving are really good. And I feel like this is kind of like the entry level. And then like, but let's say there's three people or four people or five people and they're all talking. My fear is that, you know, I would be bothering them or interrupting them. And I am at a place in life where I can usually override it and try, but I feel it. And I'm a pretty confident person in this regard, but I feel it. So I imagine other people might be freaking out when all these other people are paired off and they're the one person off to the side. So I don't know how you deal with that or what tips you have. If you want to tell me to stop interrupting those people, that's also fine. I'm curious what, if I'm doing
wrong. You absolutely can and you should.
Good.
Particularly if, you know, breaking into a group feels harder in some ways, but again, just do it. So the way I would usually approach a group is I would move. Now, it can be hard. There are times where it's not possible to do it without putting yourself out there in a way that frankly would make anyone uncomfortable. But usually with a group, there's a space. There's a space that you can just walk into physically. You can move in with a physical presence. And you do that, and you do so sort of kind of like, do so with humility and kind of jokingly, just sort of be like, say, do you mind if I join in? It sounds like you're having a really interesting conversation.
That's good.
And you know, you're complimenting. Oh, it sounds like you guys are really. Do you mind if I listen in? And what will usually happen then? And there's never been a single circumstance where people have gone no. Never. They never go no. Piss off. It's always no. Actually, yeah. Of course. They'll always go, yeah. Of course. Absolutely. That's fine. And more than 50% of the time, not only will they say, yeah, of course, it's fine, they'll then say, tell us a bit about you. And actually, now you've gotten your opportunity to introduce yourself to an entire group, and you'll work your way around on things. So groups, it's the same tactic. You're moving in. You just try and do so in a way that isn't obnoxious, like I've arrived. You move in a way where you recognize and you physically show on your face and in your body language, you recognize that you are intruding.
Right.
And you sort of seek permission to do that. And then social niceties mean that everyone has to say that it's okay. And then you get past that. And a lot of that's true in almost all situations. And you can take this into outside world situations. Like a lot of my fuck it moment actually came from when I was traveling in New Zealand at the age of 18. And I was by myself. I had to make friends in hostels and things. And there was very rarely a circumstance where you weren't approaching a group of people to try and make friends. And, you know, I would do things like I'd make some like toffees and fudge or something like that. And I'd go, hey, I've got way too many of these. Do you guys want some? And you open up a conversation. But sometimes you just go, hey, I don't know anybody here. Would you mind if I came and joined you guys? And again, there is almost never, there's an initial moment where they look at you like you're a lunatic. just put, if you're doing that in a social situation where you are genuinely butting in a group of people who know each other, they'll look at you like you're a lunatic. Just accept that. Just as long as you're not genuinely a lunatic,
you can lunatic, don't use these tips, everyone listening. Yeah.
No, but you can reassure people that you're a normal human being very quickly. They'll be like, oh, this is a bit weird. And then as soon as you've sort of joined in and you just engage like a normal person in a conversation, everyone relaxes and you go, oh, this is wonderful. Same story is true of getting to know neighbors. Like I love community. It's my job, but I also enjoy it in my personal life. And so I'm the sort of person who likes to get to know my neighbors. And which many, many people don't like doing these days. And it baffles me. And again, when you go, like we'd go like in what we were in a particular close, I was living in a house there and we went and knocked on every door in the close to invite people to come to a bit of a neighborly drinks social thing. And you knock on the door, they open up the door and they think you're a salesperson or, you know, you're there to talk to them about religion. and there's that initial, who are you? Like, what do you want? You don't have a package for me. What do you want? And you just go. And again, it's just, hi, we're neighbors. We've just moved in around the corner. And we want to put on a bit of a social, you know, we've brought round we made some biscuits. And so we made some cookies. Here's some cookies and we'd love to have you around for drinks if you're free on Sunday or whatever. And you watch people melt. You watch it happen. You watch them go from being, what are you doing on my door, to going, that's so lovely. No one does this anymore. And you know what? It makes it really easy to stand out when no one does these things anymore because no one does them. So when you do them, you really stand out and people really warm and gravitate to that. So, you know, it makes a massive difference. And so, yeah, approach groups with humility and, you know, bit tongue in cheek, bit sort of jokey and be like, I hope you don't mind, you know.
Do you find it's easier to connect with a group of three people than two people, or doesn't really matter?
Usually, yeah. Usually okay. three or more, because then what will happen with a group is it will start splintering and people will start having individual conversations. The only time a group of people maintains on a single conversation is if one person's being particularly fascinating with the story that they're telling and everyone's listening to it. Mm. Most of the time they splinter and you end up in groups of twos that's gradually sort of filter off.
So that's a good observation. So maybe two might be the hardest to enter into.
Hardest to enter into for sure.
But I like
their engaged in conversation. Yeah.
But I liked your comment of like, you know, it's just amazing. I get excited about thinking about authenticity, right? Like this is the second time in this conversation where if you just acknowledge the reality of the situation, it's so disarming and almost charming. And you're kind of making that, folks who, you know, can't see Andrew, this kind of jokeful gesture of the body language that you acknowledge that you're kind of interjecting here and you're trying and you say it in this, you know, funny, polite way. And that's wonderful. But here's the thing, like, I think you alluded to this earlier. There's still a fear though, right? Like I know you knock on the community's neighbors and so far you said everyone is very nice. I actually might be the kind of person, I love people, but I like my privacy. So the thought of you knocking on my door is very concerning. It's very concerning to me. And I'm imagining like,
at least if I turned up at your door with cookies and an invitation to a drink social with neighbors, you'd initially be very suspicious, but you're telling me that wouldn't disarm you.
It would definitely disarm me, but you know what it is? Like you're my neighbor. So if this doesn't go well, it's a very intimate, like I have, I can't explain it, but here's the thing. Even if someone were to encounter someone like me, right. And I don't even know if I would do this, but let's say you go up to those two people at the conference and it turns out like they're crying with each other, having this intimate moment. And you just happen to step into this, you know, awkward situation, or maybe they're both not nice people and they happen to not want to speak to you.
Yeah.
What I think is useful to think about, and I think you alluded to this earlier, is like, what is the worst possible thing that will happen, right? Like if you do this tens of thousands of times, it might not go well once or twice or so on, but what's the worst thing that would happen, do you think?
The worst, so my worst networking experience was, I've been a prolific networker over the years and organized lots of networking events and stuff. And I was organizing something called a LinkedIn local event. There are LinkedIn local events to this day around the world, but I was part of the team who sort of helped curate and lead on this. And over two years, these networking events grew from one person, one lady in Australia, Anna McAfee, having the idea and saying, I'm going to organize a LinkedIn local event. She called it #LinkedIn local. And it was just about bringing people together from on LinkedIn in the local community who were like connected but never met each other. And a bunch of people around the world saw that. And we grew it over 2 years to over 1,000 towns and cities.
Wow.
Yeah. In over 100 countries. And it was all volunteer. It was all volunteer led. It was not for profit. And it was all done. The whole premise of it was meaningful networking. And it was about networking to get to know the person, not the business.
Mm-hmm.
That's often if your goal of networking is to get to know businesses, that's not how business works. Businesses don't do business with businesses. People do business with people.
Right.
B2B is an illusion. It's people doing business with people still.
P2P.
Yeah, exactly. It's everything is about relationships and people working together. So we would do things like we'd ban business cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that you weren't allowed to do that. You had to get to know people. And we'd connect people on LinkedIn through various tools and stuff. So then people could relax and be like, oh, we're already connected. So let's just get to know one another. And you'd do things like you're not allowed to talk about what you do, or we'd give people little cards where it forced them to ask each other questions that you'd never ask in a networking context. Like, when was the last time you laughed so hard you cried? And just things like that, which just opened up when you were a child, what did you want to do as a job? You know, and just things where it just opens people up a bit. And that was the question they had to open every conversation with around the room.
Wow.
So I'm organizing one of these in Vancouver in Canada, where I lived for 6 months. And we'd managed, it was at the Science Center in Vancouver, which is a stunning venue, but we'd gone quite like, we were investing a lot of money in like paying for the venue. Like, they'd done a really lovely deal and stuff for us. So we were paying for catering and stuff like that, but they'd given us the venue for free and things like that. But we'd still put a lot of our money into it, which we needed to sell tickets in order to not end up screwed over.
Uh-huh.
And then any profits would be donated to charity. So I did more pushing out on LinkedIn than I have ever done in my life, where I was messaging people, I was connecting with people, and I was sending so many messages to people going, hey, let's meet. Hope you can come to this. Like, you should come. And having these conversations. And then at the event, so my worst networking event experience ever was I walk up to two people. I sort of walk up and go, hey, how are you finding it so far? I'm Andrew. And one of the ladies introduced herself. And then the other lady goes, well, you should know my name. you're going to have to help me here. And you go, well, we had a conversation on LinkedIn. We had quite a long conversation on LinkedIn and we talked about this. And I remembered the conversation. I remembered what we talked about, but it didn't help me with her name.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I've seen like a 2D tiny photo of you. I don't know who you're gonna. And she dragged me over the coals for, she did not tell me her name. And after I tried three times of going, look, I'm really sorry, but I don't remember. Please tell me your name. Don't make this awkward. And like, she was wearing a name badge as well, but her hair was over it. And
okay.
You can't, when name badges are, you've got to be careful, because name badges are always in a place that particularly when talking to women, you can't spend too long looking for it.
Right. Also another good disclaimer. That's two.
Yeah. You know, yeah. We need to find a better way of doing name badges, but you know, forehead would be ideal. She apologized later, bless her, because I sort of went back and she absolutely crucified. So I extracted myself from the conversation. I pretended that one of my fellow organizers was calling me from across the room.
Wow.
I'm really sorry, Mohammed needs me. I've got to run. I'll catch up with you later.
Right.
I just extracted myself from it because I was just squirming inside. So that's my worst experience was someone feeling like I should know who they are.
I think this happens. You know how many times I go into a room and I know I've met the person. I usually will just say, I'm so sorry. I'm just particularly bad with names. And I just say, I'm really
flawed.
Yeah. And what can they do? you know?
No, and most people accept that. That's why there's only been one occasion in which she just really kept rubbing it in and pushing the knife in further. So that was my worst experience. But the fear is there. The fear is absolutely there. And I now, because I've been networking so much for so long, the frequency with which I come across people who I have met before, I can't remember their name. We've crossed paths, particularly like if you like chatted on Zoom or whatever, and mm-hmm. then you meet them at an event where you're not expecting to meet them, and you're like, I can't remember anything. What did we talk about? I don't know. They're referencing all these wonderful things we had in a conversation. I've got no idea. And so you try and work out who they are. The other tactic with this is when I connect with people on LinkedIn, when you follow up afterwards, or just when you're connecting with people, send a note. Send a personal note that provides the context of how you know them or what interested you in getting to know them. Great to meet you tonight at XYZ event. Would love to connect and keep in touch. Best wishes, Andrew. Now,
why do you do that?
So there are two reasons. One, it helps make sure that they accept. That's a nice thing because they know, oh yeah, we met Steven. It's great. We followed up. But genuinely, the two most important reasons for doing that is I now have a permanent reminder of how and when I met that person. Mm-hmm. If there was anything that really stood out to me about our conversation, I'd be like, I loved hearing about this project you're working on. I'd include it. Now, I'm actually genuinely, the main reason I do that is not for that moment and for them. It's to remind me in 6 months' time when I have something that I want to talk to that person about, or I'm at an event and I've seen them and I go, I think I remember who they worked for, or I have a way of finding them on LinkedIn, and I will separate myself off to the side at some point. I will look them up on LinkedIn. I'll go to our messages, knowing that this is my practice, and the top message will remind me how I met.
Smart. It's really smart.
And so that's my context. That's how I know. The second reason is you now have a history. So if you were to message them usually the flow will be, I'll say, hey, great to meet you at XYZ event. Really loved hearing about this. Would love to connect. Best wishes, Andrew. Then they'll accept and they'll usually go, oh, it was great to meet. And I'll follow up with it was brilliant to meet. Thanks for accepting. Great to be connected. And I'll leave it at that often, unless they try and start a conversation. That's fine. Even if I want something from that person now, that's what I do. Because if you follow straight up with a sell, unless you've talked about something that you were going to follow up with, people start feeling like you're being salesy out. So I'll always do that, because then if I want to follow up in a week's time, 6 months' time, 5 years' time, my initial message is no longer cold, right? They will look up and they are reminded of how we met. They are reminded that we know each other, and they are reminded of our conversation. Whereas if I didn't have those two messages up there, if time has passed, we're cold now. We've both forgotten how we met. We don't know. We're connected, but that doesn't mean anything. I'm connected with like 9,000 people. What is that? It doesn't mean anything. The message means something. And so now when I follow up and say, hey, we'd love to follow up and have a chat with you about X, Y, Z, they don't need to try and work out how they knew me, because we've got it. It's there. We stored it. So that's a really, it's really important.
That's cool. Brilliant. I've been doing digital networking all wrong for 10 years now, since LinkedIn's been in existence. No, that's a really, really good tip. My wife has a spreadsheet where she takes notes on, you know, different people that she met. She's way more organized than me, but if you're doing prolific networking, as we call it, from a volume perspective, that's a really efficient way to go. Yeah.
Because also I've done it's a reminder to them and to you.
Whereas, right.
I've often thought about, you know, should I have a CRM system to track things? And I store business cards and things like that, and I'll make notes in my contacts and stuff. But by doing it there, it's a reminder for them and for you. And it's double the value.
I'm excited to follow up with you via LinkedIn after this podcast recording. I'm going to put it into action.
I look forward to it. I do like networking workshops and stuff with students. And I'm like, okay, so I look forward to seeing how you all try and connect with me now. And I will, if you try and connect with me without adding a personal note, I am rejecting you.
This is a good way to teach them.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, and so that's what you're trying to do. And then in the conversation, you're seeking ways. So there are three parts to any networking interaction. They're starting the conversation, which we've covered quite well. Then there's maintaining the conversation and adding value. And then there's closing the conversation, which is actually the hardest part.
Oh, okay. How do you do that?
So closing a conversation. We've all been there.
This has been really boring. I think I'll end the conversation now. Take care.
Yeah, that's exactly how you do it. Yeah. Well, so when you're closing a conversation, it's especially at networking events and stuff like that, because we've all been in that situation where you're talking with someone and you now want out of this conversation. And it's not, it's just maybe the conversation ran its course or whatever, or I didn't come here to have a single conversation tonight. I came to meet multiple people and this is a great conversation, but we both came here to meet numerous folks, right? So you don't want to meet everyone, because if you met everyone at a networking event, either it was really small and intimate, which is great, or you have been doing networking wrong. You're being transactional. You don't want to be that guy or girl, whatever. So the closing a conversation is the hardest bit. And most people, the thing I'll often, like, you know, in front of an audience, I'll be like, okay, ladies in the audience, guy comes up to you in a club and he's like, hey, can I buy you a drink? And you don't want to have that conversation. You don't want it. What do you say to them? And they'll be like, I'll say, oh, I need to go to the toilet. Oh, I have a boyfriend. Oh, I need to go to the bar and get another drink. They lie. they'll lie. And the golden rule of networking is don't lie. Because often what people lean to is the same things. They'll be like, oh, I've got to go to the toilet. There's only so many. And then they see you walk across the room and not go to the toilet and start another conversation with someone else, right?
Yeah, not a good look.
You don't want to go to the toilet in between every single interaction you have. Weird. They're either going to think that you've got a bladder problem by the end of it if they spot you doing that, right? So the other thing is, if you say, oh, I just need to go and get another drink, it might backfire and they'll say, oh god, I need one, I'll come with you, and so you might not get out of it that way. So within networking context, be honest about it, you know. And there are some, you know, so you can say, so there are my two favorite ways of getting out of conversations. Well, number one, if you know someone else that there who you think they might, you know, get on with, introduce them to them. Say, oh, there's someone I must introduce you. Let me take you. I'll introduce you to this person. You introduce them. Now you've done them a favor because you've made their next conversation starter less awkward. You've helped them. You've connected them with someone else. You're making their networking job easier. They love that. So make an introduction, because then you can go, I'll leave you guys to get to know one another, because actually I've just heard, I've heard your spiels about what you do. you don't need to say that, but you say, I'll leave you guys to get to know one another. I'm just going to go and talk to this person. And they're happy. They're fine. So you've extracted. The second method, let's say you don't know anyone and it's your first interaction of the evening. What are you going to do? Ask them who's the ideal person or people that you're looking to meet tonight. Who do you want to connect with? And they'll be like, oh, I kind of want to meet people in like the IT space who are working on this or that. Brilliant. Okay, well, if I come across anyone tonight who meets that, I'll bring them over and I'll introduce you to them.
Oh, smooth. That's good.
Yeah, right? So you just say that you're going to introduce them to each other, which you will, and like, do it. It's the easiest way of adding value, particularly if you're a student or a young person. You don't think you can add value at a networking event? Hell yeah, you can add value. Start introducing people to each other. They love it. That's the easiest way to add value, because and you start being sort of a connector who connects people together, and people love that. So you just say, oh, brilliant. Well, it's been so wonderful talking to you. Tell you what, I'll let you go in circle to try and find, you know, meet those people. And I'll see if I find anyone else, I'll bring them over. And now they're going to be like, oh, brilliant. Yeah, get out of here. You're doing me a favor. You're doubling my chances of finding the person that I'm looking to talk to tonight, because now we're both looking for them. And so you it's almost like you're doing them a favor by closing the conversation.
Very smart.
But you know, and you can also just be honest and say, look, I'm sure, yeah, I imagine you've come here as well to like try and meet a whole different bunch of people. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to take all of your time up tonight. So it's wonderful talking to you. Let's connect up and you know, follow up or whatever. But I'll let you go and meet some other people. And so you're just honest. You sort of say, we came here to meet multiple people. That's okay. It's okay for us to close this. It's okay that we finish now. you know.
And now we're back to the authenticity again, right? Just acknowledging the reality of the moment.
Acknowledge it and acknowledge it. And then if you can make it about you doing a favor for them, great.
Right. It's a bonus.
It's a bonus. But, you know, and you know, the introductions piece comes to, you know, fundamentally the goal of what you're trying to do here is you're trying to add value, add meaningful value to the person. Because if you add genuine value to people, that's game over. You've won. That's what's going to stick them at, make you stick out in their memory, is if you've helped them in some way, shape or form. And so you seek ways to do that. So the way to maintain and have an interesting conversation is to try and find something that you have in common and steer the conversation towards an area that you find interesting. And that you perhaps, like as a student, I ended up in a conversation with a managing director of Mercedes. I'm a student at a professional networking event. What the heck do I say to this person? She's like just titan of industry. Like, what do I say? Give me a job. Like, how could I possibly add value to someone who is so much my senior? And so what I did was I steered the conversation to familiar ground. And I just had a lecture the day before on marketing segmentation. So how you segment your audiences in the market and target them on different things, right? So at that moment in time, it was possible, and as it turned out, actual, that I might hold more expertise in that very particular subject because I'd sat in an academic lecture the day before about it, and she hadn't been at university for like 10 years. So if you're having that conversation with someone, I said, so really random question, but I'd be fascinated to learn more about how Mercedes go about like audience segmentation. Like, are there any like markets and stuff you're trying to focus on? And she sort of went, well, yeah, actually, funny. It's funny you mentioned that, because we've been trying to figure out how to break into the millennial space a bit more. And we're trying to figure out, we're currently working on that at the moment, developing a strategy. And all of a sudden, you know, when I did that, one of two things was going to happen. Either I was about to learn something, because she's going to school me in like, this is the real world. This is how what you just learned in lectures applies. Or, as happened, she had a problem. She had something to which I could lend genuinely good thoughts to, simply because I'd studied it the day before. So I was able to have a meaningful conversation or something, and I came away from that. And the halo effect of that is she then sort of assumes I'm an expert in tons of stuff to do in marketing. I'm not. I knew one thing.
Right.
But that was the conversation we had. And so if I were to follow up with that person then afterwards, you leave an impressive thing where they're going, oh, that was a really switched on student, bloody hell. And actually I had an interesting conversation, I got something from it. So steer the conversation to familiar ground and find ways that you can add value, either through acting as a sounding board for ideas they're having, or by giving genuine expertise and advice and stuff that you know about, or just learn. People like talking. People like talking about themselves and talking about what they're doing. Learn. And
for me, there's a theme here that's emerging as we kind of wrap up this is an awesome episode, and I appreciate you, Andrew, a lot. People have to recognize that they have worth and value. And when they walk into a room or they enter a conversation, you know, to your point, you may have knowledge that you can share that would actually benefit. Or, and in the example that you just mentioned, you know, what I love about what you did with that woman is you're also giving them the gift of acknowledging that they're really awesome and they have advice to give and expertise to share. And that makes them feel really good, because they want, you know, everyone loves to give advice to people and feel like they know something that the other person doesn't. So even if you're not imparting lessons, just simply giving someone the opportunity to share their lessons is kind of a way to share, give your value. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And acknowledge that. If you've learned something from them, thank them for it.
Right.
So thank you. I've learned so much by talking to you. That's been, honestly, it's really helpful. And it's thank you for taking the time to talk to me, because not everyone would spend this time talking to a student. And this is really valuable for my development. People love that. They lap it up. They get all warm inside. They feel they've done something good, and they have. And so acknowledge it, say thank you. And always follow up. Always seek to connect on LinkedIn or whatever afterwards, because that's how you then build the relationship gradually over time. And, you know, because you just never know, and never discount a person, because you just don't know where a relationship might lead. Where I can tie pretty much everything that I'm doing now in my career, I can tie back. I've done the exercise when I did my TED talk. I tied it back and I went, what were all of the conversations and people that I needed to meet, all the conversations I need to have in order for me to be where I am today? And I went back and I went, so I need to meet that person. They introduced me to them. I went all the way back. And I can tie back all of them to a single conversation with a university student, a fellow university student, at a social thing, that if I hadn't met him and hadn't had a conversation with him, he led to me meeting someone that then cascaded out into this crazy career path that I've been on. And that wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for that one. If I had discounted him and been like, because I was doing postgrad studies and he was an undergrad. I'm chatting nonsense. He was doing a master's. But I was doing postgrad studies and working full time. He was on a full time master's. If I had discounted him and gone, I don't know that I'm not going to get anything from you.
Right.
He's now a very good friend, and he and I, especially when you're young, students, like, get to know your friends and your colleagues and your peers. You don't know where anyone's going to end up. You know, I'm starting to reach that stage now where people that I've known for years that we were students and stuff like that are starting to be in really interesting roles and positions. and you just don't know. And it's not, you know, again, it sort of sounds like you're placing value on things and saying, oh, you're doing it because you think you might get something in the long run. The biggest sort of, people talk about, like, the last thing I'll say, I know we're running short on time. People talk, when we leave university, it's like, oh, start investing your pension. Why? Because the miracle of compound interest. Means the earlier you start investing and the longer you're investing for, the greater the value. It's exponential. It grows crazy. I would suggest that the same thing is true of relationships, right? And not just in a financial way, like in terms of the friendships, in terms of the emotional support, in terms of, the business opportunities and all sorts of things. Relationships have exponential value, and the more people you meet and form genuine connections with, your opportunities and your luck magnifies tenfold. Luck is an active process. People who are seen as lucky are usually just have lots of really good relationships, and some people, they have an unfair advantage because they got those relationships from their family or from their school, or from, you know, a particular, you know, they something was, you know, a network was handed to them on a platter. But for other people, they build those networks themselves, and you can do that. And so you build out that network. As the earlier you start investing in relationships, the greater the exponential effect will be on you later in life. Where I've reached a stage now where it took about 5 years of investing a lot of time and energy into networking and connecting with people in my free time, organizing events for free, volunteering in things and doing tons of stuff. And then I reached this tipping point where it's just gone nuts and opportunities come to me. I'm not chasing them. They're just happening. And I'm sitting in that situation going, oh, this is really lucky. But I also recognize that actually it's this magnifying exponential effect that people start connecting to other people. Then someone that you worked with ages ago comes back round. And that's what's led to the fact that the job I'm doing now, I didn't apply for. And nor have I applied for any of the jobs that I've had in the past 5 years since I left uni. The first one, a recruiter reached out to me and I went to an interview and I got it. Everything since that point has come through someone who I've met or someone that I know, all of them. And we have to recognize that a crude estimate of some research found that 70% of jobs that get filled and never advertised. Only 30% of the job opportunities that are out there actually get posted as a job you can apply here kind of thing. 70% of them get filled before they ever reach that stage. Because
that's pretty shocking. That's a lot. Yeah.
At Planet Mark, the first thing we do when we have a new job opportunity is we ask the team, do you know anyone who would be good for this? And if we do, we'll talk to them first.
Right.
Right. Why would we go through the effort of doing all the legwork of pushing it out there, paying to promote it, getting recruiters on, why would we do that if someone knows someone that would be perfect? Why bother? And lots of positions get filled internally as well. So that's that. Yeah, 70% of job opportunities are never advertised. So in order to find those kinds of opportunities and have them come onto your radar, you've got to know people, you've got to meet people, you've got to connect with people in meaningful ways. Because if it's not meaningful and it's not genuine, then they aren't going to remember you, and it's not going to last. So,
and I really love this, because if you enter into meeting a human, it's just, you want to meet them and you want to get to know them and you don't know what you're going to find. Life, hopefully for most of us, is going to be long. So you don't know 40 years from now or 50 years from now, you may be in a different, I've moved recently a lot, you know, and I found that there were people that I hadn't spoken to in 5-10 years, but were happy to take, have a coffee with me because I didn't know anyone in that place. And I just wanted to see people. And so there's, you know, you don't, and at the time I just was very, even when I was younger, right, very like myopically interested maybe in one particular thing about that person. But the older you get, the real, you learn there's lots of, you know, capital, as you described it, friendship and emotional support and so on, you can garner for people. So,
and just try your luck. Like, if you reach out to the CEO of your company and say, hey, I'd love to sort of pick your brains on how you got to where you are. And people genuinely want to help. If they can make the time, they will. You know, on the most part. So just, yeah, get forming genuine connections with people will make the biggest difference to your life out of anything else you could invest your time and energy in, and in countless ways. And I would encourage people to sort of, yeah, start earlier, because the earlier you start, the bigger and better it'll get. And just, and enjoy it. If at the end of a networking conversation, the only thing you have learned about the person is what you could have learned by looking at their LinkedIn profile, you failed.
Mm. Yeah.
Because you could have just read their LinkedIn profile and got their job bio. Here's the different places I've worked at, and this is the sort of thing that I do in my role. I'm going to find that out by looking at their profile. I don't need to meet them to do that. You get to know the person, not the CV. That's what you're trying to do. Get to know the person, the human being. We've all done it. It's the same way we get to know friends. It's you get to know the person and find out what makes them tick, find out what they get passionate about. If you can bring out the passion in the person, they will enjoy your conversation that you have with them. They will remember it with a fondness. And so later down the line, if you have a favor to ask, they are much more likely to do it. And they're much, much more likely to try and be helpful to you and make an introduction for you and all that good stuff. So, and that, you know, that's what's led to the point now where I have to pinch myself some of the conversations and things I end up in, going, how did that happen? I shouldn't be allowed to talk to this person. There should be some bouncer should be here going, no, don't let him in, not him again. But people do want to connect, and over time, the relationships that you have start to have this, it just accrues interest. And so that your reputation precedes you, that you are a genuine person who likes to help people, and who's like, you start getting introduced in as that. And then you reach the stage where I don't have to work that hard to unlock doors now in terms of meeting people that I want to meet and connect with. But you know, you can be tactical about it, and there can be occasions where you think if there's someone you want to connect, you really want to connect with that person, take some time to think about how you're going to do it in a meaningful way that will be different to every other approach they've ever had.
Right.
Especially if you're just trying to connect on LinkedIn with someone who's got a really big following, just reaching out saying, hey, we'd love to connect, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You have to find an area of some way of differentiating yourself where, like, I remember there was one, like Natalie Riso, really big on LinkedIn. She's got hundreds of thousands of followers. She was part of the LinkedIn student program thing where they just blew up. She's a lovely person. I've now met her in real life. But the way I connected with her was because I looked at her profile, and I've been following her for a while. And I sent, my initial note was, hey, Natalie, I've noticed that you, you seem to have some connections with, like, you seem to have a bit of a, like, a passion for China, because there's been a few things where you've volunteered and you've done things that are to do with sort of like China and things, which she was based in Los Angeles at the time, and, you know, wasn't didn't appear to be of Chinese descent or anything like that. So I was sort of like, I was just kind of curious to find out where that came from. And she accepted, which I was surprised. It doesn't always work, but she accepted. She went, that is the best opening connection I've ever had.
Nice.
I've never had anyone point that out. It was really interesting. And we had a bit of a conversation about it. And then it sort of went. And then when I was over in the States and we met up in real life, we had a foundation and a basis upon which to build a friendship. So you do that sort of thing. You can be kind of tactical with it. Like, I say these things in public on podcasts, but like, so someone that I wanted to connect with, and I don't think I've told him the extent to which I thought about how I wanted to connect with him, a guy called Paul Dickinson. He's the chair of the Carbon Disclosure Project, which he founded in the year 2000. So this is a man who is, a hero of the sustainability world. He's been on this for, since before I was born. And he's just a really lovely, genuine, wonderful bloke. And he hosts my favorite podcast, Outrage and Optimism, which is all about, it's hosted by Christiana Figueres, Paul Dickinson and Tom Rivett-Carnac. Christiana and Tom were the architects behind the Paris Climate Agreement. So again, sustainability gods in terms of everyone's heroes in terms of stuff that they've achieved. And so I really wanted to connect with them. And, I really wanted to be able to be friends with Paul. And so I knew I wanted to do that. And it would have been very easy for me to just give it a whirl, just try and connect with them. But I knew that something just generic wasn't going to work. And so I waited until I thought I had something that I could use. And on a particular episode of their podcast, they made a bit of fun out of Paul because of his passion for video conferencing technologies and virtual meetings, and how he thought that was going to be a huge game changer for sustainability because it meant we weren't going to need to travel as much, and video conferencing was going to be, and he'd been building video conferencing companies since the 80s. Like he's again, pioneer. And I heard that and I went, that's it. That's how I'm going to try and start a conversation, because I'd been doing, I do sort of virtual innovation workshops and keynotes and stuff like that with Disney's former head of innovation and creativity. And we've been doing workshops in virtual reality. So we've been doing workshops on innovation and creativity with people inside of a virtual reality world. And so I was like, we share an interest. And this is different. This isn't just me reaching out to them saying we both like sustainability, which every other schmuck was going to try. This was something we had in common that I could try and use as a point of connection. And so again, reach out on LinkedIn, send a connection request saying, hey, love the podcast. Heard that you're also a big fan of video conferencing tools. I've been doing virtual reality workshops on innovation and creativity. We'd love to, connect for a chat and trade tips on the best things that you can do and that sort of thing.
Mutual. And it worked.
Yeah. He responded very quickly, but he's lovely. And he then said, yeah, let's have a call. We set up to have like a half hour call just before Christmas. It was just before Christmas, like holidays had already started kind of Christmas time. So I was already like, oh, wow, this is amazing. He wants to talk to me and it's Christmas. And we made it be a half an hour conversation, turned into like a 3-hour conversation.
Wow.
And I would now count him as a friend, where he's come to stuff that I've done. And we continue to want to try and find ways to work together and to do stuff together. And he wants to introduce me to Tom. at some point I'd like to try and meet Christiana. I waited with, when you, particularly if you're going to try and form a relationship with someone and form a friendship with someone who is in demand, you have to find your connection point that's going to differentiate. How is this relationship going to be mutual? It's not just all about what you get from them. What can you contribute to it? And if that's your goal, if your goal is, how do I add value to this person? What can I do that's going to be meaningfully valuable to them? That's your starting point, then you'll get there. If your starting point is, how can I get what I want from them? You're off to a bad start. You're not going to get there.
Well, this was really brilliant, Andrew. Really fun, really useful. So many great tips. I learned a lot, and I consider myself a prolific networker, even though I'm introverted and might turn you down if you were on my doorstep.
Introverts are just as good at networking as extroverts. They really, if anything, can be better, because often being introverted can give someone a very strong empathy and a very sensitive to people. And so you can use that to your advantage.
I'm glad. Well, truly fantastic. I know people are going to get a lot out of this. I certainly know what I'm going to, follow up with you via LinkedIn. I encourage other folks to implement that tactic. And really, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and for being on the Reducetarian podcast.
Very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here, Brian.
See you everyone next time on the Reducetarian podcast. Thanks again.